You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? Today's guest is Denise Lee Yan. Blending a fresh perspective, 25 years of experience working with world-class brands including Sony and Frito-Lay, and a talent for inspiring audiences, Denise Lee Yan is a leading authority on building and positioning exceptional brands. Denise is the author of the best-selling book, What Great Brands Do, The 7 Brand Building Principles That Separate the Best from the Rest, and the new book, Extraordinary Experiences, What Great Retail and Restaurant Brands Do. Denise, welcome to On Brand.
Hello, Nick.
Well, I am so excited. We were talking a bit beforehand about how we got connected, and I was on a quest to find an interesting branding book to put on a syllabus for a new course that I'm working on, that I'm teaching at the University of Iowa here this coming spring. And I happened upon What Great Brands Do, and I loved it. And I thought, you know, this is a no-brainer to get you on the podcast.
Well, I'm so excited to hear that you're adding it to the curriculum. Thank you so much.
Yeah, yeah. So I have to ask, you know, branding is an interesting field. And what is your personal journey that led you to writing, speaking about what great brands do?
Sure. So the last corporate job that I had, which I had over 11 years ago, so it's been a long time, but the last job that I had was with Sony Electronics, and I was heading up brand and strategy. And that position really, coalesced or culminated all these different experiences that I had been collecting through the previous career that I'd had. So I started out in market research and really studying consumer behavior and how people make decisions about what to buy and what not to buy. I then moved into product management, where I really learned how do you actually bring a product to market. And then I had also worked at some advertising agencies, so I learned like the creative communication side of it. So the position at Sony really brought together those three disciplines into this great brand building role. And I don't have the classic, P&G brand management experience or thing like that, but I feel like I have all the different experiences that have given me a great insight into how to build a great brand.
Yeah, and because again, all of that is kind of baked into the 7 principles in the book, are really. It's amazing how applicable they are to businesses of all shapes and sizes, too. This is what I was kind of blown away by.
Yeah, I think that there are some core principles, as I laid out in my book, that are universal across, as you said, all businesses of shape, sizes, industries, life stage, et cetera. You know, certainly there are things that you want to emphasize and certainly factors that, maybe affect certain industries. But in general, I think that a lot of the core principles really apply to any brand builder.
And, I think that sometimes, though, there's this disconnect on, like you said, kind of the classic P&G, consumer packaged goods, brand management side of things that is sometimes lost on brands in the small business, B2B, nonprofit, government space. I mean, does it seem like there's a disconnect on some of those brand building principles for those other sectors?
Well, you know, I think that it would be a big mistake. And, you know, I was just talking about this with another brand person yesterday. It would be a big mistake to kind of look at brand building principles or the strategies that other companies have used and say, oh, well, my situation is different. There's no possible way that, you know, what worked for, you know, Nike or Tide or GE, for example, would work for me. Because I do think that there are some universal truths and some really important insights about brand building that apply to everyone. But I will say that, you know, the P&G brand management model, you know, in that particular instance, and I mean, this goes for Clorox and Kraft and any other kind of packaged goods company, you're really a product manufacturer, and you are still relying on your retail channel or, you know, however you're distributing your product to actually get it into the hands of customers. And that's very different from restaurants, retail, from a lot of, you know, B2B services kinds and small businesses where you are interacting directly with your customers on a day-to-day basis. So there is the whole element of customer experience that that extends beyond a product or, you know, extends beyond this brand that you have, you know, narrowly defined brand, that as a traditional packaged goods brand manager, you wouldn't necessarily get involved with. So certainly there's more to brand building than just the product brand part of it.
Yeah, well, I think it's also interesting how you break it down, because you deliver your seven principles in what great brands do in a very unique order that kind of layers them. Because I was thinking, I really don't know that it'd work to read it or go through it out of order to pick and choose around the book. I know, you know, some you can do that, but you know, 'cause you start in such an important place with great brands starting inside and the role of culture. And I think that especially with newer forms of media, it's so important to have, you know, to have your people on board. And I think that that's another place that, you know, over time, it's been a bit of a course correction getting, you know, people involved internally in branding.
Right. Well, that's because I think most people think when they think about branding, they think about external image and message and communications and what are we communicating to our customer. And I think what great brands know is that it doesn't matter how you communicate if you're not actually doing what your brand stands for. And so, and in order to do what your brand stands for, that is something that everyone in the organization needs to be involved with. So to your point, brand building has to start inside. If you want to have a successful, integral, valuable brand, you're going to need to start inside first. And then, you know, the other principles, as you said, kind of build upon that foundation.
Well, it's interesting because you almost lay out kind of some starting inside, but then almost some concentric circles as you work your way out too, because you talk about and provide some examples of the role that even vendors, partners, and suppliers can play as well. And I think that these are missed opportunities by so many.
Well, yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. You know, my favorite example is airlines. You know, I think for a long time, most of them just focused on the in-plane experience and maybe, you know, the reservation kind of purchasing experience. But generally, it was like, okay, once people board our planes, you know, what seats are we going to provide? Like, how much legroom are we going to give them? What kind of meals are we going to serve? What kind of service we're going to offer? And all of that is extremely important. But you and I know as a traveler that our entire travel experience is comprised of so many other experiences that the airline may or may not have any control over, but we still associate with that brand experience. And so, you know, whether it is kind of the online purchasing and kind of searching process that we go through to find the flights and then make the reservations that we want, but then getting to the airport and then being in the airport and then TSA and the security and then being in the airport, boarding area and you know, what kind of food service do they have and what kind of information they're providing me. And, you know, and then, you know, on the back end, once you get off the plane, it's all about, you know, how is our luggage being handled and are we getting to our destination in a, you know, easy and timely manner. And I mean, and that whole thing comprises our travel experience. And I think it would be a mistake for an airline to think, oh, well, we only care about this one part, because that's not how consumers think about it.
You know, it makes me think of another kind of big idea that follows throughout the book, and that is the kind of trade-off of the kind of the short-term gains versus the long-term value building. You know, some of those quick and easy things that you can do that you shouldn't always necessarily focus on, versus, you know, what you just said kind of in that example of ways to gain real long-term trust and value around the brand.
You know, I think that it's easy for me to say, oh, you know, great brands commit and stay committed, and you really need to be thinking about the long term, because I think that intuitively everyone would agree with that. I mean, I think, or most people would say, yes, I understand the value of kind of a long term perspective. But, you know, there are the realities of short term market pressures. You know, there are the realities of trends and changing consumer needs. And, you know, there's a lot that will cause you to question whether or not the long term is really the most important thing for you to focus on right now. Or you might not even intentionally be trading off long term for short term. You just make these decisions thinking it's the best thing for your brand without realizing what you're doing. So I think really the key there is to be absolutely crystal clear on what your brand stands for. What are those key values and attributes that you want your brand to be associated with? And then use those as a filter for every decision that you make. And over time, you'll find that that produces the long-term result. But I think it's always approaching it from a brand-driven decision-making process that will help you stay committed to your brand.
Well, it's interesting because you said it's easy to say, yes, stay committed. But I think the way that you present it, too, has some nuance that some people might miss, because I know, like I think it was the Shake Shack example, that the logical move to grow the brand, most would think, would be to grow locations. Mm-hmm. And that was a textbook example, hence, you know, it ending up on some curriculum here. Of a decision that, I mean, you, like you said, a brand-driven decision, because they realized that would change or jeopardize who they are, and that was one of the most important things of what they stood for.
Yes. You know, growth is very attractive, but bigger is not always better, right? And yeah. I think that, you know, another brand that I talk about in the book is Southwest Airlines. So going back to my airlines example, and, you know, I think that when the brand first started out, they were very clear about the things that they were going to define their brand. You know, short hauls, kind of this, I wouldn't call it a low service model, but kind of like a very streamlined service model. We're going to use, you know, B site airports and all these things that really, I think, made a very efficient airline and different differentiated brand. And over time, as the company has grown and as, you know, and as they've tried to attract, to appeal to more and more customers, I think they've actually rethought some of those principles. And in fact, there was just an article a couple weeks ago, or a couple months ago, in Fortune magazine about how Southwest is trying to attract more business travelers. And in attracting more business travelers, they're becoming more like all the other airlines, you know, the American, United, and Deltas of the world. And so I think that it's tricky, because as you want to grow, you know, there's this natural pull away from the distinctiveness of their brand and the core of your brand. And I think it's very dangerous.
Well, so what's someone do in a situation like that? Because obviously, they, for whatever reason, I mean, probably more sales, because business travelers are obviously flying a lot. But how do you balance that then, in terms of not letting that strategic pivot jeopardize Southwest being Southwest?
Well, a couple things. I mean, I think one is to really, to think about, what your brand, the scope of your brand. When I say what your brand stands for, what the scope of that brand is. And in the case of Southwest, they define their brand very narrowly around certain flying experience attributes. Now, that contrasts with Virgin Airlines, for example, that I think has always defined the Virgin brand much more broadly in terms of a sense of values and attributes that can be extended across everything from soda to music and including airlines. And as a result, I think that, what Southwest had is a narrow brand that they either needed to figure out how do we do more, how do we get more growth out of our current narrow brand, or maybe we need to introduce a new brand that actually enters into these other areas so that we're not diluting the core of our brand. So I think that, it's always more difficult to start a new brand or to give birth to a new brand. But in some cases, it's almost better to do that than to dilute the strength of your existing brand.
Right, right. Another kind of theme, the short-term versus long-term that I liked in the book was around Chapter 5's focus on the small stuff. Because I think, we spend so much time in management and marketing focusing on big picture. And I thought that was a really accessible way to get at the similarly sprawling topic of brand experience.
So the principle is great brands sweat the small stuff. And I think it goes back to this, it kind of relates to the first principle that I talked about before, which is that I think great brands understand that you can think big and you can communicate and market these bold visions about what your brand stands for and kind of the experience that you aspire to, et cetera. But if you're not designing your brand experience in the details to deliver on that, then there's a disconnect. And I think that customers end up being more disappointed than if you just hadn't even talked about your bold brand vision in the first place. So I think that I should say that it also relates to the first principle in the sense that sweating the small stuff is something that everyone in the organization needs to do. Again, it's not just the responsibility of the marketing department or the advertising agency or even the salespeople to present the brand in a certain way. It's every single touch point, every way that a customer might have some sort of impression of the brand needs to be aligned with that core of your brand. And so it really requires everyone in the organization sweating the small stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because it gets back to, like you said, the first point of making sure that everybody's on the same page and understands the role that they play in building the brand.
Yes, absolutely. And so in the new book that I just released, Extraordinary Experiences, where I'm profiling great retail and restaurant brands, this really comes to light because I think that what you see are, everyone from Costco, this warehouse club brand, to, Popeyes, which is Popeyes Louisiana Kitchen is a fast food chain. You see how the need for everyone in the organization to understand the brand, embrace it, understand their role in interpreting and delivering it in everything that they do is so critical to making that brand as strong as it is.
You just said Costco, and it's the magic word because we have five kids, so it was built for people like me.
Yes.
And, they are, it's like you said, you kind of have to put in the disclaimer that they're this warehouse brand. And it's amazing because in theory, that's built around this concept of a stripped down experience. But somehow, in spite of that, you'd think that, to the last point of the small stuff, that they've subtracted small stuff, but they've actually added so much in the experience too.
Absolutely. And, you know, as I researched Costco for the book, I discovered more and more of what of the science or the magic in their experience. And so, you know, I think, for example, like one of the things that they don't have signs that tell you where to find things in the store, you know, which I think as a shopper can sometimes be frustrating. You know, they do it in part, frankly, because, I mean, cost-wise, they don't want to spend money on signs, and then that way they can move things around more easily. They have a lot more flexibility in their operations. But it also serves the purpose of creating this kind of treasure hunt experience for customers, in that you pretty much need to go down every aisle, and all of a sudden you discover things that you didn't even know that you needed, but now you can't live without, you know? And so it's brilliant, even though it's very stripped down. And I think that that's a really great point that you make, Nick, that, you know, sweating the small stuff and the details doesn't mean loading up your experience with all these great, like, all these great bells and whistles. Sometimes it's just really being very clear about what is that experience you want to offer, and then just making sure that everything aligns with it.
I might be making this up, or maybe it just goes with the thinking in your books. But I believe you make that point, too, that it's not always the additive, adding things to a brand to make it better, that sometimes it may be subtracting and simplifying also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I think... And this definitely applies for entrepreneurs and small business owners, in the sense that there's so much opportunity and so many things you could do with your business and so many things you could do with your experience, that you tend to fall into the trap of, oh, well, let's add this on, let's add that on. But I think that some of the strongest brands, yeah, do strip away some of the extra fluff and really just make sure that the things that they want to be known for are the things that they over-deliver on. And everything else becomes so much less important.
So you mentioned, we kind of naturally segued into the new book. So does it follow the seven principles from what great brands do and contextualize it around retail and restaurants? Or is it a new approach, a new framework?
No, it's exactly what you said. So basically what I did is I researched and profiled seven retail and restaurant brands, and each one I align with one of the principles from what great brands do. So, for example, I mentioned Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, the fast food chain. They are the example that I use them for is great brands start inside. Whereas for Costco, the principle that I aligned with that brand is great brands don't chase customers. So what you get is a deeper understanding of what this principle really means and what it looks like in action. You know, so it's one thing to kind of say, I hope that what great brands do is very practical in the sense of how it serves up these principles. But it's one thing to understand the principle. It's another thing to say, okay, what does this really look like when I go into a store? Or when I'm training my staff, or, you know, when I'm making a decision about what kind of experience I want to offer. So so Extraordinary Experiences, the new book, is really just designed to kind of take an even deeper dive into each one of the principles.
You know, your seven principles, many of them you phrased very uniquely, that, you know, you'd get to the beginning of a new chapter and you'd say, what is this point? Or it would almost sound contradictory. Like the great brands don't chase customers, because I'm like, what? But we all want customers. So very, very, very clever turn of the phrase there. But that's one specifically that I wondered too, if you could tease out what that means just a little bit without giving it away, because it is kind of a neat concept.
You know, I think where this principle came from is me observing how great brands attract like-minded customers to them, and they're willing to almost turn their backs on other kinds of customers. And so, you know, whether the one of the examples I use in my book is Red Bull, the energy drink, and how they really have positioned their brand very super premium, exclusive, kind of, you know, out there. And it's something that has attracted many customers to them, but it's also alienated other customers from them. And, you know, I think that, again, going back to entrepreneurs and small business owners, there's often the temptation to say, we don't want to turn away any customer at all. Like, everyone is our customer, you know. But the problem is that, as the adage goes, if you try to be everything to everyone, you end up being nothing to no one, you know. I think being clear about who you're for and be willing to say who you're not for is critical, especially for small business owners and entrepreneurs, because you have limited resources. You can't spend your money on everyone. So who are your most valuable, most profitable, who are going to be your most loyal customers? And you want to design your brand to appeal to them. You want to design your experience to really serve them well and serve them first and serve them best.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a great example. I think Costco, I'm excited to read the new book to unpack that there, because that makes, I could see that perspective of drawing in the right people, but it's not for everyone.
Right.
Some people might not like the signs or the lack of signs where you end up on the treasure hunt that for me always ends in that canister of the sea salt covered chocolate caramels.
So I used to have a Costco membership a while ago, but it's just me and my husband now. And so it used to be a joke that I would never let my husband go to Costco alone. And if we went together, I'd never let him out of my sight, because he would end up with all these things. And I'm like, no, but it was a great thrill for him. And you know, I think that's why Costco is such a beloved brand to so many people.
Oh, that's great. You know, it's seven principles in each book, but it closes with an eighth chapter that I thought, especially in the context, that was kind of I was kind of in the whole way, but especially with using this as a teaching tool, because you close with an eighth principle that you kind of mention. In the introduction, but then kind of bring back and bookend this idea as well. And that is brand as a business. And I think when we are so confused about, like you said, the definition of branding, I mean, I think it's so tricky to even get a level set talking with anybody, because they're thinking that it's the brand advertising, it's just the logo. But you have one of the biggest, most comprehensive, could be foreign to some, but really impactful strategies for how the role of the brand in a business.
Yes. So, you know, if you think about your brand as it's what you do and how you do it, I mean, it boils down to that, really. You know, if that is indeed what your brand is, there should be no daylight between your brand and your business. Every great brand defines its brand as its business. And so you're not promoting a brand image or marketing a certain element of your brand positioning that's different from actually how you're operating your business, but rather your brand becomes the thing that drives and aligns and guides everything that your organization does. And that's really what the brand as business management approach is. And, you know, it's always a little bit tricky for me, because I've served up these seven principles. And then in the new book, I, kind of further go into the seven principles. And the danger in that approach is that people are like, great brands don't chase customers. Okay. That one, you know, it's kind of sounds surprising, but now that I understand it, I can do that. I can work on that. But the danger of that is thinking that you only have to do one of these principles. I think what I've observed and proven in my research is that great brands execute on all of the principles, and that's what makes them great. They're actually, there's no area of their business where they're not applying that brand filter in their decision making, and that's what gives them the strength and the value that they've created over time.
Because I think I've talked to many that sometimes when you... putting in quotes that when branding oversteps its bounds, I think there are some people that are very set in an older school way of thinking that brand is this one thing that is a piece of, is a piece, and even then is just kind of a subset of marketing. Mm-hmm. And I never really cared for that alignment or that organization. And I've always thought something bigger, and I've never heard it explained quite as well as as you did in the book of, I mean, because again, it isn't just about, I mean, especially the way marketing's changing, but how people are interacting with one another and why, you know, back to the first point of starting inside, that it's everything from all of the personal experiences to the small stuff, and it can't just sit under marketing in an org chart.
I think you're absolutely right that so much has changed now. And so there may have been a time when brand building primarily consisted of developing a cool logo and having kind of a clever tagline and then having great advertising to communicate that. And that may have been enough to attract customers. But to your point, now that everyone knows everything, right, there needs to be so much more integrity and authenticity and substance behind those symbols of your brand. And so I think that it really takes it takes people within an organization to understand that, yes, those are expressions of our brand and they're very important expressions of our brand, but we're setting ourselves up for failure if all we do is kind of put those images and messages out there and we're not actually delivering on it.
Yeah. I mean, and that's another point that you make too, is, you know, in terms of, you know, brand as a business, in terms of that promise that we talk so much about with brands, kind of the delivery of that promise as well.
Yeah. You know, the phrase, your brand can't just be a promise. It must be a promise delivered. I think that phrase is so important because people often think about, you know, brand promise, and it's like, okay, we can have the most cleverly or worded or most provocatively sounding brand promise, but why would we have that brand promise if we can't deliver on that promise? As I said before, it would almost be better if you managed people's expectations and said, yeah, we're only going to do this little thing, and then you did it really well. I think customers would have a lot more respect and you know, value that a lot more.
Would that adage be under promise and over deliver?
I think that's one of my life principles. So, you know, it's like I'd rather, yes, be underestimated.
So yeah. Say someone is reading your books, hearing this, thinking about brand as a business and is all fired up. That's a big thing to do. How do you go and start the process of bringing about that kind of change in mindset to so many organizations that do have the brand compartmentalized over here?
Well, one of the first things that I think is to really pinpoint where your biggest gaps are. So granted, your brand as business is a complete management approach, but oftentimes it's really helpful to understand, okay, where are our biggest weaknesses or where are our biggest opportunities that we're not building our brand in this way? And I have a brand assessment that's available. If you go to the site, What Great Brands Do, there's a section of downloads, and in the downloads, one of the things is an assessment that you can access. And that just takes you through 10 questions, and it really, I think, helps you identify where those gaps are. And what I always say is you should take it. You should have, you know, the rest of your executive team take it. You should have, like, lots of different people in your organization take it, and then compare notes. And I think that what you'll find is there's actually, in most organizations, at least with the clients I've done it, there's pretty good consensus about where those gaps are. And then from there, you can really start figuring out, okay, how do we close those gaps? Another good follow-up is then one of the tools that I introduced in What Great Brands Do is a brand touchpoint wheel. And I introduce it in the context of the principal great brand, Sweat the Small Stuff, because it identifies all the different touchpoints between your brand and the outside world. But it also shows how all the different internal departments of your organization impact those touch points. And so that's another great way for people to kind of have the light bulbs go off, as it did when I used this tool at Sony, for people to say, oh, wow, you know, out of our 240 touch points that we identified, only 40 of them are things that the marketing department's responsible for. The remaining 200 are things that the product developers are responsible for, that our service department's responsible for, our corporate department or legal or, you know, whatever. And so I think it really kind of opens people's eyes to brand is this thing that drives everything in your organization, not just a small subset.
Well, and plus you flip that the other way then, and it's what you're left with is if, you know, you've done all of this, if you followed the system correctly, it is something that has greater value than just the sum of all the individual parts. I think that, to me, if anybody doesn't get it, is one of the biggest kind of proponents for this approach, too.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right, Nick.
So what else should folks know about the new book, which is out now?
Yes. So it's available on Amazon. And also, again, if you go to What Great Brands Do, the website, there's a link that you can then find out more information about that book as well as this new book, Extraordinary Experiences. And it's a short ebook. It's so you could probably read it in just probably like a little over an hour, really. I think there's a lot of content there that I think that you would want to digest and work through over time. But it's not. Don't think, oh, I don't read a lot of books. I don't have a lot of time. This is something that I really tried to make as accessible and as practical as possible.
Okay. And again, I love the focus on restaurant and retail. Any other sectors that are on your radar for for great brand explorations?
Yeah, well, as we started out, you know, I think that these brand building principles apply to all kinds of brands. And because I work a lot in the restaurant or retail categories, that's why I chose to write this particular edition. But, you know, I think that one area that I think that it really that is very kind of a natural adjacency is the hospitality market. And so whether that's, you know, hotels or whether that's resorts or cruise line providers or kind of like anything that is an in-person experience for someone. And then it goes into banking and financial services and other things. I mean, they're really... The opportunities are endless, right?
Yeah. Well, again, I think that's the hallmark of any solid system, that you can take a look at all of these different slices and see how those principles are being applied there.
Absolutely, yes.
Well, Denise, as we wrap up, we always ask one of our favorite questions here, and that is, if there is a brand that has made you smile recently.
Oh, yes. Just yesterday, it happened to me. Now, it's Starbucks. So, I mean, everyone's like, oh, you know, of course she says Starbucks. You know, she's a brand person. Yeah. But, you know, they have new fall cups. And they normally have these like red holiday cups that are kind of like exciting and kind of just in a way are this big deal when you're kind of like, okay, it's just like a red cup, you know, but they have these new fall cups that are, you know, very well designed and just really intricate drawings on them. And then they have this one of my favorite products, which is a salted caramel mocha, probably has 1,000 calories in it. I mean, it's incredibly
indulgent.
Don't
look it up.
Yeah, no. But, you know, when I walked into the Starbucks and I was like, oh, what am I going to get? And I saw that item on the menu and I was like, yes, because, you know, they only have it in the fall. I'm like, yes, I'm so excited. And then I get this beautifully yummy, you know, drink in this gorgeous cup. And I just thought, this is a $5 cup of coffee. And it just made my day. So that's the power of experience. I think that's the power of a great brand.
Well, you know, it's funny you said the thing about the, you know, as brand people, there's ones that you're not allowed to pick as your favorite because you can't say, you can't say Starbucks or Apple or Nike.
Yes.
But I think sometimes we look past them and it's like, well, we say that we can't say them because they are so flawlessly good at, well, all of the principles that you bring up, but the overall experience too. I mean, you go and look at somewhere else where they've served you, you know, maybe something that is a comparable beverage, but they've delivered it to you in a cup from Costco.
Right. With not very friendly employees. Like when the employee at Starbucks saw my delight, she kind of reveled in that also. But I will say, that one of the things I did with Extraordinary Experiences, my new book, is I was sure to include brands, smaller brands. I'm pretty sure that not everyone has heard of all the brands in the book. So just because you know, we think about the Starbucks and the Nikes and the Apples of the world. I wanted to profile brands that people had never heard of. So that's an extra incentive to read the book, because I think that you'll learn that even small, fairly unknown brands can still be great brands.
Well, so is there some, it doesn't have to be one from the book or one that you've encountered in your travels, that is a, here's a really random brand you probably haven't heard of doing amazing things in their space?
Well, so it is from my book, and it, because it's just so extraordinary, I have to talk about them. Perch, it's P-I-R-C-H. They are a kind of high-end appliance and home furnishings kind of retailer. I think that they might have 10, 15 stores at the most. But again, I think that probably not a lot of people have heard about this brand. But they are so extraordinary. Their culture that they create within all of their employees is so engaging, not only in terms of engaging the person, but engaging them in the brand itself. The experience that they deliver in their stores is unlike any other. And the way that they run their company operations, that's one of the things I talk about in the book, is just kind of their approach to training and their approach to service and their approach to customer service. All of that is quite amazing for this small, relatively unknown brand. So I'm so looking forward to everyone learning about Perch. It really is a great brand.
That is awesome. Can't wait to learn more. So speaking of learning more, where can folks go to learn more about you,
yes,
your books, etc.?
Okay, so if you go to Denise Lee Yon, and that's DeniseLeeYon.com, that's my main website. And you can either go there or you can just go to What Great Brands Do. Either way, it's fairly easy to find all the information about What Great Brands Do, as well as my new book, Extraordinary Experiences. But, you know, one of the things that I use the most is Twitter. In fact, Nick, I think that's how you and I first connected.
I believe so.
Yeah, and what a beautiful connection it's turned out to be. So my handle is Denise Lee Yon, and I really would encourage you to connect with me there. I actually actively engage in Twitter, and I just really enjoy it a lot.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our notes for this show. Denise, thanks for joining us this week.
Thank you, Nick.
And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our listeners. Recently, Sean Carpenter gave us a shout on Twitter for our recent episode featuring Joe Polizzi of the Content Marketing Institute. Thanks, Sean, for listening. Thanks, Joe, for being a great guest. And as a reminder, if you like something on this episode or another, or if you have a question you'd like to hear our guests answer, let me know on Twitter using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. Last but not least, as I said, you can find links to everything Denise and I discussed over at BrandDrivenDigital.com. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and RSS. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, click the star, give us a quick rating and a review, help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.